powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
You know, Bump, before we even get into this conversation, I got to say congrats to your Cougs. We knew that they'd be in the tournament, but number 7 seed playing on Thursday. Does it feel different to actually see it on the schedule?
It does. I had this conversation with my wife. She called me like a pessimist. And I go, look, I always prepare for the worst. Like, I'm
sure.
You know, if I think I'm going to get an opportunity, I always think I'm not going to get it, but I'm just going to prepare. Same thing with the Cougs. I go, look, they should be in. But I've had my heart broken too many times in my life, so I prepare for the worst. So now that it's official, I can relax and get ready for Drake.
We're going to have a little bit of a preview for that, plus a conversation about the season as a whole and his future. Kyle Smith joins us at noon, so we've got lots of questions for him about what's a really interesting matchup. Teams that are just very different. You know, one's the biggest team and one's one of the shortest. One team is really hot. One team's kind of correcting. You know, kind of a lopsided end to the season. So really, really good conversation coming up at noon. We also have a short show today because we are sending you to Mariners baseball at 1 p.m. Before we get to that, two quarterbacks have been dealt. The Seahawks had their choice, presumably, of Justin Fields and Sam Howell. So why do we think they went with Howell? We got to start by talking about what happened with the other. Justin Fields, traded by Chicago to the Pittsburgh Steelers, goes there to a quarterback room with Russell Wilson. Poor Russ, Bump, thought he was going there with the job handed to him. Now, he will be the starter with Fields as the backup. But what an interesting quarterback room happening over there in Pittsburgh.
It is interesting. First, Russell was over there, and you envision him and Kenny Pickett going at it. I thought Russell and him would have to battle it out. I thought Russell would eventually get the job done. But then things changed. And Kenny Pickett wanted out of there. All he said, so what he told me is that he doesn't want to compete. I'm not here for that. I should be the guy. Entitlement. I'm not going to talk about his generation. But I'm like, come on, Kenny, what have you done to make you think that you should have the job if Russell Wilson is in the building? A guy who probably has only had one really bad season his whole career. That was over there in Denver. He goes to Philly. I go, good luck over there. You really ain't going to play in Philly. And then Justin Fields, I won't forget, man. I got the news. It happened on Saturday, right? Mm. I pull up and my neighbor, Dr. C. Brooks, he's the biggest Pittsburgh Steelers fan I know. And I get out my car. He goes, Bump, you hear what happened? Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. I go, oh, if they get the deal done with Fields, man, that'd be crazy. He goes, no, it's done. I go, what? So I go and I look at the details and I go, what they get for this thing, man? What the Bears, what? Gave up
they got a sixth round comp pick.
Then it turns into a fourth. He plays 51% of the snaps. And I'm trying to wrap my head around it. And I go, Pittsburgh Steelers just put themselves in a great position. They went from having a guy who you know ain't going to get it done to, okay, let's bring a vet in and see if he's learned from his mistakes. And let's bring in a rookie who hasn't gotten a fair shot over there with the Chicago Bears. Fields has a lot to work on. Russell has a lot to work on, but you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers in the offseason that they had, and then you add Patrick Queen to the mix as well. They're in a tough division, but they look a lot more better.
And should the Seahawks have tried to make a move? I don't know. Either way, why the Bears traded Justin Fields to Pittsburgh was explained by Adam Schefter.
The fact of the matter is, it was a soft trade market, as the compensation for him shows, and the Bears felt that they were doing right by Justin Fields to move him now, to get him to his new team now, despite the fact that the compensation turned out to be lower than some people thought it would be. It's a 2025 conditional sixth round pick that could be a fourth if he plays in 51% of the plays this upcoming season. But the Bears were not worried about the compensation. They thought they were doing right by the young man.
Feels like they just gave him to Pittsburgh at that rate. 2025 sixth round comp pick that could turn into a fourth, maybe still a day three pick no matter what. But here's the deal. I don't fully believe that, Bump. I don't. At the end of the day, the NFL's a business. I would wager that the Bears felt more comfortable sending him to an AFC team than they did an NFC team. I'm sure there are other things that went into this.
Yeah. My question with all that, and I agree with that, too. They're like, look, let's just let him go. There has to be some type of relationships involved. Obviously, I would think they want the best for Justin, but they also want to make sure they put themselves in a position. But when that went down, I look at it, I go, okay, why didn't they just wait? I read an article, and it made complete sense. It said, look, if they waited till after the first round to try to work something out, you got 18 hours to try to figure it out. The first round is when all the ballers, air quotes, are going to be taken off the board when it comes to QBs. You wait after that first round, wait 18 and see what's out there. Or you wait till after the draft and say, okay, now who wants him? Maybe his value goes up. Or you wait until you get into training camp and you say, someone's going to get hurt. Who wants him now? All those scenarios are real, but I think they wanted to make sure the Bears, they wanted to make sure that when Caleb or Jaden Daniels, when their name is called, they come into the situation and they know they're the guy. You don't have to walk into the classroom and see your competition or see the old guy and have that awkward exchange and that awkward relationship. They're always going to say, oh, yeah, we're going to work together. Things are going to be fine. But you know how this thing goes. It's a competition, and you don't want the old head, the former, the ex-boyfriend, hanging around making things difficult, right? If you I got out of a relationship, man, I'm in a new one. I'm not hitting up my ex. I'm not hanging out with her. I'm not. She doesn't have a presence in my life anymore. That's the way I look at that situation. If you want a clean breakup, you got to get rid of the pictures. You got to get rid of the sweaters, the Tupperware, anything that reminds you of the ex. Got to be gone.
I think when you're looking at where both quarterbacks went to, I'm anticipating that there are some Seahawks fans that go, well, wait, we only had to give up a sixth rounder to get Justin Fields. Why not get Fields? The answer to me is because Seattle wasn't looking for a potential starter. They were looking for a backup. They were looking for someone to replace Drew Lock, who maybe could have something special there. We spoke with John Keim, who covers the Commanders for ESPN, and he still had some upside when it came to Sam Howell.
The hard part for Sam is going to be how long they stick with him, and not just this year, but beyond this year, because he's going to need to develop, and that's the way he can do that, and being in one system for a couple years and then coming in and playing. So that's why I think Seattle's a good spot for him. You can go in there, you got a new staff, you can play behind a veteran, and you can develop there.
Good trade. I mean, a good spot for Sam Howell. Seattle gets what they need. Washington gets what they need. I think that just people look at a former first-rounder who can be this really dynamic player and think, well, why not that guy? That's my answer.
Yeah, I'm with you. And also, you would have to make a decision on Justin Fields a bit quicker than with Sam Howell.
Exactly.
You can pick up the option, but still, Sam Howell is a year or a year and a half behind Justin Fields, gives him more time to develop. Howell came in this league as a fifth-round pick. So, granted, he was a starter with the Commanders. I don't think in this point of his career he's saying, I have to be a starter in this league. He's talking to his agent. He's seeing what the market is like around the NFL. I think his mentality is, I can learn for a year or two or sit for a year or two and try to win a job. To whereas the Justin Fields, you got 1 year, and this young man's going to want to be in the NFL and be a starter because he's been that already. He was such a high draft pick. So you have to look at that as well. What situation kind of fit what the Hawks want? You have a quarterback in Geno for the next couple of years. You bring in a guy who you can develop as Sam Howell. And then you look at the books. In a year or two, you look at the books again and see, what can we afford at the quarterback spot? Is there a veteran out there that we like? And how is Sam Howell developing? With Justin Fields, that changes the progress or the process a bit.
Do you think that Seattle missed an opportunity not trying to trade for Justin Fields?
Possibly. When you look at the potential, because all you're doing with Justin Fields is you're gauging his potential. And you are looking at the Bears organization and you're saying, they don't do a good job at developing quarterbacks. They didn't put him in a good position. We are the guys who can do that. Are we willing to put ourselves in that financial situation in a year or two and have to make that decision? Or do you look at Geno and believe in him for a year or two and allow a guy to develop? So I think they missed when it comes to the ceiling. His ceiling right now is higher than Sam Howell's, in my opinion. This could change over a year or two. I think Sam Howell can play some ball as well. So they did miss an opportunity when you look at the potential of that young man, but I think they did what they thought was best for them.
Well, and as you mentioned already, like looking ahead to the future in terms of, okay, let's say that, Geno starts the season. Maybe he gets hurt. Justin Fields plays a couple snaps, and it's just enough to be tempting. Well, are you ready to commit that much money? I think no matter what, the answer would have been no, so it would have felt like a failure. But, again, you're looking at a weaker draft class in 2025, so I know that people just felt like, well, maybe Justin Fields could work. I don't know. I kind of feel like, so before the Seahawks acquired Sam Howell, we were talking, you and I, to a ton of people about Justin Fields because we thought that there was a possibility that he could land in Seattle. And everyone was kind of like, look, he's got a lot of really good weapons, But there was some doubt that he was actually going to reach that potential. And you can look at Chicago and recognize that it's a struggling organization where a lot of people haven't found success at quarterback. But I don't know that this was like this slam dunk trade. If he works out for Pittsburgh, phenomenal. I'm wrong. I don't know that it's as obvious a decision.
There's a reason why Russell Wilson is there, too. Now, granted, $1.2 million on the year, as far as Russell's salary, helps that situation. But Pittsburgh put themselves, not foolproof, but it's pretty dang close. You got a veteran, a guy who's been in locker rooms, who's had success and failures, who knows what it takes to be a top-tier NFL quarterback, who's looking for his last chance. If Russell Wilson doesn't get it done in Pittsburgh this year, he will not go into camp the following year or the year after that, wherever he is, as the guy. He's going to be a guy who's brought in to compete. He's seeing if he can rejuvenate his career, which is crazy just having one bad year. But all the drama that surrounded Russell Wilson and the perception of it just makes it that much worse. And then you have a guy, he's not a rookie, right? Obviously, he's a third, fourth-year guy. But you feel like he was just beat up and battered over there with Chicago. And he had games. I believe he ended the season on like a three-game win streak or something like that. He has shown that he can make some plays in this league. So I look at the Steelers situation. I go, you guys did your thing. You've set yourself up. Maybe Russell Wilson doesn't work out in week 4 or 5. You want to give Justin Fields a chance. So be it. Maybe Justin Fields ends up leaving the next year. You still get a comp pick out that deal. It's the Steelers set them up for success regardless. I look at the Steelers and the Seahawks in their situation, and I'm completely fine with it. I would have loved to have Justin Fields here, but I feel like I understand what the Seahawks are doing, especially when you look at all the other moves they're making, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
But it's starting to take shape when it comes to understanding the Seahawks and their approach.
Nelson, regular listener in the 206, Fields makes $3.3 million this year. Sam makes $950,000. Fields' fifth-year option is $21 million. I think all this shows is John sold on Geno being the guy for at least 2 years. I don't know that John sold on Geno being the guy for at least 2 years. I think that John would love an opportunity to find a young rookie quarterback. I just think it means to me that he doesn't think Sam Howell or Justin Fields can be that guy.
Yeah, I think Schneider's buying time. He's buying time while evaluating two guys that I think he feels has the potential to lead this team. We know he feels Geno has the potential to lead this team, or they wouldn't have given him that deal.
Yes.
With Sam Howell, you watch him play, you hear what John says. He goes, let's give him an opportunity to grow and develop. And if neither of those guys are here in 2 to 3 years, all good. We're going to build a team around the next quarterback and buy ourselves some time while still being competitive. I'm not mad at that approach.
No, not at all. I think that it's still hard not to imagine John Schneider, who was so curious about Patrick Mahomes, who was so curious about Josh Allen, who was curious about Baker Mayfield, not being curious about younger quarterbacks out there, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether it's in 2026. I can't see him not pulling the trigger on one of those guys eventually.
Yeah, it's going to go down, and I'm excited to see it. But for now, Geno and Sam, let's get it.
All right, you guys. Jerry DePoto joined Wyman and Bob at the end of last week. We have some sound from him talking about his expectations for 2024. Good stuff. That's coming your way in about 15 minutes right now. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bob and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Cougs are off to the NCAA tournament. They're going for the first time since 2008. They're a 7 seed, and they will take on number 10 seed Drake on Thursday. What's the real headline?
Coug fans actually have a reason to get drunk on a weekday this time.
There's always a reason.
Let's go.
There's always a reason. Thirsty
a reason.
Thursdays? Come on.
I remember Thirsty Thursday a reason?
Because
that's just the name of a day themed around drinking.
It has a name, so we must celebrate. But I remember my first month in college, obviously it's football season. I go, y'all going drinking on a Thursday? That blew my mind. But you know what? Now we have a reason. Coach Smith got the Cougs and Rice and the whole gang into the tourney. I'm excited. I was nervous for a bit, more nervous than I should have been, but you know how it is. Let's go get it, Cougs.
Coach Smith is going to be joining us at noon. Speaking of teams in the tourney, Curtis, how are you feeling about your Wildcats chances?
I mean, based off of recent years, not great, but I'm looking at a lot of these statistical projections, and a lot of them have Arizona as the favorite in the West region, which, I mean, cool. You got to play the game. And they play Long Beach State. Interesting because Tommy Lloyd was hired by Dan Monson, who was Long Beach State's head coach all those years ago at Gonzaga. So interesting connection there.
Was Long Beach State the one that fired?
That's the one.
Yeah. Okay, just making sure.
Before the conference tournament, thinking they had no shot.
And then messed around and made the tourney.
And they won the whole thing.
I'm rooting so hard for this team, and I for no reason. There's always that like random... late seed that you kind of want a reason to root for. Like maybe, you know, the coach is from your hometown or whatever. There's going to be a random reason. You like the color yellow, whatever it is. I can't explain it, but you're always going to be rooting for those guys. Of course, not against your Wildcats, Curtis.
Thanks, Stacey.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Seahawks added another starting linebacker. They signed former Dolphin Jerome Baker to a one-year deal. What's the real headline?
Now they just need a Jerome Butcher and a Jerome Candlestick Maker.
Got him.
You're going to have to explain that for some people, or you think we're good?
I think we're good.
We're good? All right, cool. No, I like it. Honestly, Jerome Baker... I'm watching film on this dude, and then I see a headline that, all right, he's close to signing with Cleveland Browns. So I stop watching film because I don't want to get my heart broken. I move on. And then I see this, and I'm excited, man. I like what he brings to the table. This is your Mike linebacker. So I was talking about Dotson. Good ball player, good linebacker, but not your Mike linebacker. Baker's going to be good. Mm-hmm. He's a physical guy. He's been in the league 6 or 7 years, spent some time in Miami, from Ohio State, I believe. I like this pick. Yeah, they are starting. It's again, slowly but surely, it's taking form. It's taking shape. It's not the names that you thought were going to be out there, but they are filling the slots on the depth chart. I like Baker, a violent player. That's what you need at Mike.
Speaking of not the names you thought you were going to be out there, there's always going to be weak spots on a roster. We're so used to for 10 years, either Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright being one of those guys, with the exception of like that season where it's Jordan Brooks and Cody and you're wondering what's happening, you know, with Barton or whatever. But overall, like, linebacker's been a pretty strong position for Seattle more often than not over the last decade. Shucks. Sometimes you're just going to have a position group where there are names you don't necessarily know. I mean, Kansas City a year ago had a really young secondary, the youngest secondary in football, and it was like, that's their big weak spot, that's their weakness, and lo and behold, it's one of their strongest units, and a big part of the reason that that defense helped lead this team to a Super Bowl. I'm not saying that that's what will become of this Seahawks linebacker group. I'm just saying... sometimes you have to make concessions somewhere. For the Seahawks, it's not spending a ton of money at linebacker or at safety. Other times you could have a surprise there, and maybe that's one of these two guys.
As you were talking about that, I went through my my memory bank, and I go, man, the Hawks went from like Lofa to David Hawthorne to Bobby Wagner. You throw KJ in there. There's a history in the last 15 years of great linebacker play. So I think that's great to point out that sometimes you got to take a step back to take a few steps forward. Hopefully this isn't a huge step back and they find guys that they will sign for longer contracts later.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. The Mariners have released minor leaguer Cole Tucker, who is the husband of Hollywood actress Vanessa Hudgens. What's the real headline?
We had one shot to have someone more famous than Macklemore be tied to the Mariners, and we blew it. God, can I just have one celebrity?
And they just announced their pregnancy, too.
I know. We could have had a Tacoma Mariners baby that was, like, tied to Hollywood here, and it would have been amazing, and instead, not anymore. In actual Mariners news, Luis Castillo has been named their opening day starter for the second straight season.
That's secondary to this.
Yeah, I agree.
Honestly, I had to look my man up and see what Cole Tucker was all about. Uh-huh. Great head of hair this young man has.
But you're a little surprised that he landed Vanessa Hudgens?
I never hate the play at all.
Yeah.
You do what you do, bro. You said the right things at the right times at the right moment. You know, it happens like that. Universe has put you in places and things happen. But then I looked at his spring training numbers, which we're not supposed to do apparently. But when it comes to guys like Cole Tucker, you do. My man's batting 200, has an OPS of 629. Yeah, he's probably time to go.
Worth it.
Probably time to go.
Worth it to have Vanessa
so
Hudgens
saying,
here.
Bump that he probably has a great personality.
Hey, great guy, apparently.
I'm guessing that's why Vanessa is with him.
Hey, yeah. And that's the thing about famous people, too. I mean, you see famous people with their partners, and to you, it doesn't match, right? The eye, like, man, she's so beautiful. He's this. But, you know, it's all about personality sometimes with those. They're around, famous people are around famous, beautiful people all the time. Yeah. They can get that if they want. Sometimes they just want to have a beer with Cole Tucker.
Yeah, she's not with him for his money.
Oh, absolutely not. No, let's just get
that
straight. Yeah, for anyone that wants to say anything about it. She's got plenty of money and is beautiful. And yet they're married and they're having a baby together. And it could have been tied, you know, to a Mariner storyline, and not anymore. We could have had Vanessa at games.
Could have had her on the show, I think, right?
Oh, for sure we could have had her on the show. Can I say something? You know how people say don't hate the player, hate the game?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you hate the player? This feels like pushing responsibility off onto something else.
Because don't hate the player to me means don't hate on him because you weren't in that situation. He was just there. He said the right things. You know, and maybe the game sometimes can be deceptive.
Okay.
The game can be shady. That's why you hate the game.
See, I was thinking, like, when people are like, don't hate the player, hate the game, when it's something where it's, like, clearly shady practice, and it's like, but you're doing a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all you're saying is like, well, I had no choice, but you did have a choice not to do that.
It's complicated, honestly.
I know. I do think sometimes you can hate the player, though.
You can.
And I think sometimes you should.
Are you hating the player in this situation?
Cole Tucker? No.
Nah.
No.
Not hating the game either.
I'm not hating the player, nor am I hating the game.
Cutting Cole Tucker, so we don't have Vanessa here.
Again, Cougs head coach Kyle Smith is going to join us at noon. Coming up at 11, we're going to talk with ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed. First, though, we got to head to spring training. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Jerry Dipoto has high expectations for the Mariners in 2024. He told Wyman and Bob why next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Jerry Dipoto has high expectations for the Mariners in 2024, as he should, but he explained why in an interview with Wyman and Bob last week from Peoria. So let's just go through some Dipoto sound. I've got quite a bit. This might even carry over into our next segment. But we'll start with just how he's feeling at training camp, or excuse me, at spring training and what everything feels like.
You know, the way our season went, the way it ended, the tumult through our offseason, you know, I think there is a freshness in the air. There is a vibe among our players that we are good. And we have been good. And I think it's time for this group just to take the next step. You know, we have a host of really talented young players that are now entering the primes of their career. We have veteran players who've been around and look fantastic in the spring. We have acquired players who do it, you know, a little bit differently, but the way we've always wanted to do it, you know, like that on-base, contact-oriented, create team offense.
There's so much to peel apart here, Bump, a lot of different things. To me, it's the we've got young players entering the prime of their career. I think for so long, Jerry Dipoto was able to be like, oh, we're the youngest team, we're the youngest team, we're the mm-hmm. youngest team. And in some ways, he can still say that. But like, you are starting to look and say, well, Logan and George and not Julio, who's only 23, but Cal, like, these guys are entering their prime. They're inching closer to when they need to be performing. Like, now's when you need to start delivering.
And it's a good position to be in, I think, but it's also, I would imagine, a scary one for those guys, because it seems like every year there's something that you can lean on when it comes to this team, right? And it's, as of late, it's been just the youth. They're a young team trying to figure it out. That's why the highs are extremely high and the lows are extremely lows. But now you got some young guys who have been around the block a few times, and now you've added some veterans, bring back guys like the Mitches or whatnot, and you feel like they should be primed to handle situations better than they have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's right. It's beautiful to see guys like you just mentioned, Julio and Logan and Kirby and all these young dudes being comfortable with themselves. Obviously they are. They wouldn't be in the show, but experience is the best thing for anybody when it comes to your job, your occupation, especially in sports. Now there are some expectations. There have been expectations, but I think this year, at least the way I view this team,
mm-hmm.
it's as realistic as it's ever been or ever could be in the last 4 or 5 years, that this is legit, should be a team that can push for the playoffs. Now, they did that last year, fell a couple games short, but with another year of development from Cal and Julio, and then you add these pieces, I like where they are. But again, you got to perform. You got to start off not cold, not hot, but somewhere in the middle.
Speaking of last year, I don't want to spend too much time looking back when we've got so much sound looking forward, but this was a clip that Curtis really disagreed with. Bump, I'm curious as to how you feel about it.
It does feel like there's more optimism because I feel like there's more optimism externally. You know, when we were in camp last year, nobody knew that we were going to have a middling year. You know, there wasn't an expectation. We didn't get off to a bad start. We were 500 in the middle of May, you know, which is not an uncommon, you know, thing for a contending club. Yeah. You know, we then went on a terrible run through the middle of the season, and we had to recover from it. Now, nobody could have predicted some of the struggle that individual players would have, especially in the first half of last year, based on their career norms when we were sitting here on the patio last year.
Do you think that's fair or spin?
Nobody knew we'd be pretty much an average team.
Yeah.
I think we all felt that was probably going to happen because of the moves, the guys they brought in. Colton Wong, big ups, man, been in the league a while, had some good years, not here. Who else?
A.J. Pollock.
A.J. Pollock, thank you.
Tommy LaStella.
Thank you.
Thinking.
It goes on and on and on. Those names didn't make us feel like this was a championship team. Yet, that's the message that they put out there. So, this is him looking at this team within his bubble. And I'm sure these guys are walking around. It's the player's job to convince themselves and to look at their team and be able to rely on their teammates and say, this team is good enough. Even when they're not sometimes, you convince yourself of that. This team is good enough. Of course, management is going to say this team is good enough. They put this team together. So I think he's living in that bubble, in that Mariners organization bubble, and saying, no one thought this would be an average team. A lot of people thought this was going to be an average team. I think this team has potential to be better than last year's team, for sure, because I like these pieces. But still, the pieces that they added doesn't make us feel like this is a for sure a ALS contender and a World Series type of team. And I don't think it would be fair to expect that either way, just because of the division that you play in. But this team does look a bit better. Last year, I think most of us thought it was going to be an average team.
I agree. Curtis, you're the one who said you don't start a season with some of those guys on your roster and think, yeah, we will avoid being middling.
Yeah, especially based off of all the names that were available last year in free agency. And that was what you came up with. It was A.J. Pollock, Colton Wong, who I think we couldn't have foreseen how far the bottom was going to fall out mm-hmm. on him. And then Tommy LaStella is like, man, these are pretty uninspiring moves.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree with you, Bump, that the roster is not only better this year, but better because it's deeper. Here's what Jerry DePoto had to say.
And I guess in June, July, September of this year, we can have the conversation again. You know, injuries aside, because no one can predict injuries, this is the deepest team that we've had during our time here. And I think the players see that. You know, there's not a lot of holes up and down in that lineup. We may not have a ton of household names, but we do have some grinders. We have talented players. We have guys that can create offense. We have one of the best starting rotations in the league. When healthy, we have among the, if not the best bullpen, you know, in baseball. That's an exciting thing. Now it's on us to go out and perform because we do have the talent to do some damage this year.
I'm glad he mentioned the bullpen because you need to get that group healthier before you start pointing to depth and start pointing to your pitching as like the thing that can win you games every single night. But all of that being said, I do agree with Jerry here. I think mm-hmm. they are a deeper team. And no, they're not this shoe-in World Series team. But I mean, every year we look at teams around the league and say that team's a World Series team. And those teams don't end up going and winning a World Series. I mean, sometimes they do. But like the Dodgers didn't last year. The Braves didn't last year.
No, I agree with them. I think they're deeper than last year. The only position we're really still scratching our heads on a little bit, I think, is third base. Other than that, I mean, and we still got some names there that we recognize. Maybe the houses all across America aren't going to recognize these guys. But we've seen Rojas. We know what Rojas can do. I mean, mm-hmm. we have an idea of what they can be. So I agree with him when he talks about depth. They've always had depth. It's just the quality of depth. So I would say this year's number twos or the guys who are going to be seen on the diamond from time to time or more talented than the guys collectively that we saw last year. That should be true, but you are correct. It all starts and ends with your rotation and your bullpen. Mm-hmm. That is what you hang your hat on. That is what you've been known for the last few years. That's who you have to continue to be. And then you have to rely on some of these guys that people might not know to flash every now and then. Again, you don't want to depend on the bottom of the lineup, but they're going to have some nights where they carry this ball club. Obviously, you want to depend on your 1-5, 1-6, 7. But, yeah, I agree with them. They are deeper. Now it's about staying healthy. Mm-hmm. Brash not being healthy concerns me, obviously. Santos not being healthy concerns me. Get those guys right, and I might feel better. The thing about American sports is that it's just so vague when it comes to exactly how healthy guys are. We know Brash is banged up. I'm not Brash's homie. I'm not his agent. He's not telling me what that arm feels like. We know Santos has this thing going. We just got to wait and see how those guys are actually doing, because setbacks can happen just by tossing the ball one or two times, and you're back 1 or 2 weeks. So just take your time with that. So with that being said, if they come out with a slow start and the bullpen ain't as hot as we want it to be, I'm gonna give them a little bit of a break, because they are dealing with some injuries.
It's an interesting point you make prior to that, though, of like, hey, if you're looking early in the season at a bullpen that's a little banged up, you don't get to have a year where you could wait for the bats to get hot and then say, you know, Julio goes like God mode in August. If you want to pull ahead in the AL West or keep pace in the AL West, you need your offense to get hot a little bit sooner and make up for some injuries in the back half of your bullpen. That's interesting.
Yeah, bats got to go, man. They have to go. They don't have to be ridiculous. They don't have to put up 10, 12 runs. I get that. Let's be realistic. Yeah. But we want to see some good at-bats. We want to see runners being driven in. We want to see swinging at good pitches. We want contact. That's it, man. It's a long season. But when there are concerns with the bullpen and their health, you have to look at the bats and say, can you pick up that slack for a little bit? If Santos and Brash aren't ready to go, which they probably aren't going to be ready.
Speaking of the bats, let's take a listen to what DePoto had to say about one Ty France.
With Ty, I can't say that the latter part of that has never been shared. You know, like these are some things that are important to us, you know, but what Ty did this offseason, he did on his own. As I understand it, conversations with JP, conversations behind the door, like this is something. I think Ty went out last year coming off of a two-year run where Ty France was one of the best right-handed hitters in the league by adjusted statistics. You know, if you look at WRC plus, OPS plus, as good as anybody. And, you know, and I think he was a little bit embarrassed by the fact that he took a little bit of a downturn last year. And he went out and he did something about it. And that's, to me, how you handle things when you are not at your best. And I think Ty would be the first to tell you he wasn't at his best for a lot of the year last year.
I can't tell if I'm signing myself up for some kind of underwhelming return, but I am so curious about Ty France. I say that knowing he's not your most powerful hitter, knowing he's not your big home run guy, knowing he's certainly not your fastest bases-stealing runner. Like, I know all these things about Ty France, and yet his story is one of the more interesting ones to me.
Ty France is your slot receiver. He is your Wes Welker. He's your Julian Edelman. He has the potential to put up big numbers, mm-hmm. but all you want from him is to be consistent. And I think if you can get any type of consistency out of Ty France, you'll be good to go. But, yeah, I'm interested as well. I think, again, he's part of the young guys who have grown up and who are entering their primes. If he balls out, I like their chances.
Going to be another name more important than any of the others. We'll tell you who that is next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
We talked about why Jerry DePoto has high expectations for 2024. One reason that a lot of fans do, Julio Rodriguez. Is he set for a monster season? Well, let's talk about it. First, the latest from Jerry DePoto on Julio. This is from Friday.
He's 23 years old. He's already been, you know, one of the most, you know, noteworthy players in the league for two consecutive seasons. And I don't think we've seen close to what he's capable of. And I think he knows that. He wants World Series. He wants championships. He wants, you know, he wants all of it. You know, he wants the statue on the street and the Hall of Fame. You know, because they're all within his reach. He has that kind of ability. And I think the thing that turns me on the most is he wants to lead. He has entered that stage in his career. He has the financial security of a long-term contract. He has the respect of every single guy in that clubhouse, not just for his ability, but for how hard he works at it. And he's a great guy to be around. And so he checks every box. Now he wants to lead. And you have to earn that, you know, and I think he's earned that with his years in the league. And you can see some adjustments that he's making in this spring and the way he helps manage the others in the clubhouse.
A lot there from Jerry Bump, but Julio the leader is what I'm most interested in.
Yeah, because, you know, when there's a rookie NFL quarterback and he runs out week one and he's got the C patch on, I go, what do you do to earn that mm-hmm. captain's patch? Now, you'll get guys like a CJ Stroud who I might have that question week one, but why week four?
Right,
I'm like,
all right,
it makes sense. Julio has had that captain patch. And sometimes as the best player on your team, you will be expected to lead, even if that's not who you are naturally, if it's not in your personality. I think Julio has always been a natural leader, but I also think that he has felt like he has to back it up with his play. Mm-hmm. That's what the great ones do. So now he's entering, his third season in the bigs, and he's put together a nice little resume. It's only 2 years, but like, who were you speaking to? Who was I talking right there?
Jerry DePoto was
DePoto.
Right there,
yeah. Like DePoto was saying, he's got the respect of the league.
Yeah.
He's got the respect of his peers. He's got the respect of the guys in the clubhouse, and he puts in the work. So how does his leadership change a bit? I would expect him to be a bit more vocal, not necessarily yelling at guys mm-hmm. or you know, holding them accountable publicly. But there are little things that you do naturally because you feel like you've backed it up. My first start against Oregon, my freshman year, man, I put my foot in my mouth and I said something in the paper I probably wasn't supposed to say. I was getting my first start, Evergreen, the local paper over there in Pullman. They're like, hey, how do you feel? And I'm like, man, I just want to back up all the hype I came up with, yada, yada. And I'm reading this in the paper. I go, dang, man, I should have been a bit more humble with that. Thankfully, I went out and I played well that game. And ever since then, I go, okay, I'm just going to work hard. By the end of my sophomore year, I'm like, okay, I've arrived. I've put enough games together to where I feel more comfortable speaking out on some things I wouldn't speak out on. I mean, that's me at a small scale. Julio, at the biggest scale in all of baseball,
I mean, it's still he's relevant.
Done it. Yeah, but he's done it. So I'm excited to see and feel Julio. If you've ever been to a game, I know a lot of you guys listening, you feel Julio as soon as he steps out of that dugout.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see the little things that have changed with him and how he responds, because I'm looking at his number. That August was something crazy, Stacey, as you know.
Yeah.
I mean, .429 batting average, .724 slug, and .1197 OPS. My man went on a run. And when you put together months like that, it's not by accident, especially not in baseball. Football, I've seen a couple guys have a couple good weeks, go for $150 and $100, and they disappear for the rest of the year. In baseball, that's one of the hardest things to do. Julio, it's time. He's arrived. He's already been here. We know this.
Yeah.
But now the nation knows, and I think he'll be able to lead in a different way.
Well, and I think it's very forgivable for a then 20, 21. He'll you know, be 23 this season, but a then 21-year-old Julio to be the fun one, to mm-hmm. be happy and silly and the young guy, especially when you had older veterans on this team. Like, I think people expected, you're clearly the best player. You are clearly one of the best players in baseball. Eventually, in an ideal world, you step up to the plate and you kind of become a vocal leader for the team, but it all was forgiven. You're so young. Oh my God, of course. Mm-hmm. And 23 is still exceptionally young, but I think that this team needs it. There's a bit of a leadership void that they've filled in part with Mitch Haniger coming back. But I think of Scott Servais traveling around, going to everyone's homes and knowing that he needed to get players in, checked in for an offseason where there was a lot of drama. And I think that you need a player representative on your team there, too. Like, you need a player on your side.
Mm-hmm. I love you mentioned Mitch Haniger. Because I feel like he has no problem being the bad cop if he has to be the bad cop. And Julio, Julio is me with my kids. I'm the good cop 85-90% of the time. My wife is the one who spends more time with him, so she's typically the bad cop. But when the bad cop is supported by the good cop and the good cop is supported by the bad cop, and you have those side conversations on where do you want to push this team, every team I've been on, we had that. From the Seahawks to WSU to high school. Every team has good cop, bad cop, the leaders, and they work together. They go out to lunch and have conversations about where this team should go and what needs to be fixed or what they should do. So I love that Haniger is back because I feel like he has no problem being that. But every now and then, once or twice this year, Julio's going to have to be that bad cop. Like when I get that call from the wifey, hey, little Michael's tripping. When you get home, you need to be that bad cop. Eventually, Julio's going to have to do that.
Do you ever talk in the mirror and go, take the garbage out? Like, you're like, I need to get my tone right.
I'm driving in the car like, man, he tripping, man. gonna make me do this? You tripping.
Do you guys ever share a look where you're like, look, you know mom made me do this. You know I'm still, you know we're still boys, right?
I mean, I always let them know I'm not your friend, but yeah. I'm here to support you.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. All right, we are switching gears. Going Seahawks football here. Coming up at 11:15, Bump is going to talk about the signings of those two linebackers. Before we get to that, though, ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed joins us next to talk about what the Seahawks could do at pick number 16. Don't go anywhere.